Okay then.
Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I was sentenced 3 to 10 years for quoting Deuteronomy 28, starting with the 15th verse. But here in the city of Benton Harbor, anything can happen if you're not on top of your program. I've been fighting Whirlpool for years. They have came in and gentrified our whole community. They're building a Jack Nicklaus signature golf course right in the heart of the city of Benton Harbor. And I say no to that. Matter of fact, we are planning a mass demonstration in Benton Harbor, Michigan on August the 10th, 2010. Our goal is to stop Whirlpool and Harbor Shores, the greedy corporation, from stealing land from the residents of Benton Harbor. We call Harbor Shores, we call Whirlpool, the evil twins. The evil twins. We let them know that we're not going to take this mess anymore. The opening of the Jack Nicklaus signature golf course for the rich only will be August the 10th. Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Tom Watson, Johnny Miller will all be there. So bring your golf clubs. Please do not hesitate. Bring your golf clubs. We're going to show them that we're not intimidated by them, these rich, greedy corporations that have continued to pounce on us, and we have allowed them to do so. So now it's time that we make a move. The people in Benton Harbor, we are forcing them to wake up. For years they have been sleeping. But our goal is to let the world know that we're prepared to fight and take this thing to a whole different level. And I tell you, I got my brother Larry Pinckney on the other line, and he's the co-host of this show. And Larry, are you there?
Yes, my brother, I'm here.
And also, he's not only my personal friend, he's a man who I love. He's a true hero, a true soldier, and also a former Black Panther Party, a real one. Not like most people say I was a Black Panther Party member. He was a legitimate Black Panther Party member, and he's my friend. Larry, how are you doing today?
Yes, sir. Doing all right, one day at a time. You know, staying strong in the struggle, brother. What else can we do? We got to stay strong.
Oh, absolutely, Larry. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, tell our listening audience just a little bit about you.
Well, just what you said, that I am a former member, former section leader in the Black Panther Party out of California, former Minister of Interior for the Republic of New Africa. I am the only quote-unquote American who successfully self-authored my political, human, and civil rights case to the United Nations. And I did this from prison, where I had been wrongfully imprisoned. I continue to fight, continue to carry on in the struggle today, because if anything, instead of things having gotten better, they've gotten much worse, and we all need to intensify in this struggle if we are going to get, as you were saying about the corporations, the government, we need to get them off of our backs, off of our necks, you know. But anyway, that's my background.
Well, that's beautiful. But, you know, I'm not going to prolong all this talk. What I want to do, I want to read this email that I've been sending out about Lynn Stewart, because the day is the day that we're going to dedicate this show to Lynn Stewart. This email was circulated, Free Lynn Stewart, What We Must Do. Support the people attorney and freedom fighters. It said, fax letter support for Lynn Stewart to her legal defense committee. This was sent out, and also they have a vigil for her. It's supposed to start at 5:30. They're going to march from Tom Paine Park, Work Street, between Central and Lafayette Street, 3 blocks to the Metropolitan Correctional Center, the MCC, where Lynn is detained. From 7 to 9, the vigil will be in support of Lynn at the Metropolitan Correctional Center, 150 Park Road. Then Wednesday is the day of the sentencing, so we know that we're going to pack the courthouse. I got a couple of guys from the radio station up there who's going to, they claim they're going to be there, and they are in full support. Matter of fact, since we aired our show last week, I had several people to call me in reference to Lynn, and they want to know what they can do to help her. And what I did pass on the information to them, and they are circulating information in reference to her. But, Larry, before I go any further, tell us a little bit about Lynn, because you know her personally.
Yes, well, Lynn Stewart, we call her the people's lawyer, the people's lawyer. Lynn has, for over 40 years, been representing the most oppressed, disenfranchised, and poor people in this nation. She in fact, also represented members, and when I say represented, I mean vigorously, would defend them in court. And of course, this enraged the federal government. By the way, Lynn Stewart is a white woman, and I say that because I want people to understand that she is a representative of humanity. That is to say, she fights for humanity. It makes no difference whatsoever what her pigmentation is. She successfully defended many, many people, most of whom were people of quote-unquote color. This goes back, as I said, over 40 years. And one of her latest cases some years ago, the federal government essentially, and I'm just going to say it like it is, under the George the Butcher, George W. Bush regime, they set her up. And if anybody remembers, Attorney General John Ashcroft.
Absolutely.
Okay, and he had the unmitigated audacity to talk about her nationally on a program, and I should say lie about her. They tried to actually say she was a quote-unquote terrorist, which is most interesting because these are the terrorists calling the people terrorists. You know,
Larry, you said that she was on a show. Was that the Letterman show that Ashcroft went on and Ashley told that lie right on TV?
You know what? I'm not sure, but I do know that the show that I'm speaking of was they actually called a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
Ashcroft actually called a press conference and released disinformation, misinformation about Lynn. And there were a number of other national shows as well. But the point being that the whole thing was to imprison Lynn and to strike fear into the hearts of other lawyers and into the hearts of the people in general. And I want to say this very quickly, that so what happened with Obama and Eric, his so-called attorney, so-called justice, Eric Holder, why they continued it. Nothing changed. It got worse. You know, it got worse with Obama, with the Obama-Biden regime, with their current, Attorney General Eric Holder. So people need to understand that this was continued. So they imprisoned Lynn, and you already mentioned right now she is at this quote-unquote correctional facility. Correctional, what a misnomer, correctional. You know, we need some correctional facilities for these folks who are running stuff, and we see if we can do some correcting of them. But we don't have correctional facilities. We have out-and-out prisons. That's what they are. That's how they're run, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, to stay on the topic, so Lynn has been in prison now for approximately a year. They're trying to extend her sentence. Now, everybody should keep in mind that Lynn is over 70, that is 70, over 70 years old. First of all, she never should have been charged or convicted of anything. Secondly, the sentence that she got, as I said, she never should have received anyway. But now, the past few months, under this Obama regime, the courts, etc., and prosecutors are trying to extend this sister, woman's sentence. At that age, that amounts to basically a death sentence. That's
are
what they're really trying to do.
Are they talking, what are they talking about, 30 more years, or is that 20, 8 more years? Because I know the total they were saying was 30 years. I don't know whether they mean 30 more years or what, because her original sentence was 28 months. Is that correct?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's how I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But here,
go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Here's where we want to be. We want to make sure people understand that she is and she always will be the people's lawyer. And we need to get out there. And I tell you, we had a tremendous response from this from our show last week in reference to Lynn Stewart. And I'm more than happy, Larry. I tell you, last week you laid a foundation down that people are still talking about. They're still talking about the foundation you laid down in reference to Linda Stewart. And I'm really excited about this. And I tell you, what I'm going to do, we're going to bring her husband on in a minute, but I want you to give us what you want to say from your heart. Let the people know.
Well, you know, first, I thank you. I thank you for saying that. And I'm sure her husband, Ralph Pointer, when he's brought on, will give some more very precious and crucial details. But let me say this. We must support Lynn. We must turn out. We must reverse this fascist insanity that the government and so-called justice system, because I say so-called, we know there's no justice. Let's get real. And then when we have wonderful people such as Lynn Stewart, they try to smash them down. They try to put fear into our hearts. That's what this is all about. So all I can say for this sister, this woman, Lynn Stewart, is we must fight. We must fight as if it's our own lives at stake, because it really, really, really is. And stand up, send letters, let folks know, let the government know, let the so-called justice system, i.e. judicial system, know. Let Lynn know how much we care, and that we are not going to sit back and do nothing. We're not going to sit back and tolerate this corporate, fascist, lying, disgusting, filthy system incarcerating and or murdering beautiful people, any of us, like they're trying to do with Sister Lynn Stewart.
Oh, you know what, Larry? That was beautiful. I tell you what, people are listening, and they will be talking. I would tell you this, that people will be there. They will be there to support Lynn. And, Larry, I thank you very, very much, because, you know, you sound like it's coming straight from your heart. And I don't think it could get any better than that. But listen, let's bring on Ralph. Ralph Pond, are you there?
I'm here. And, gentlemen, I appreciate all of your efforts, for as you know, that the struggle gets up close and personal to all of us. I know Reverend Pinckney, your time in jail, Larry Pinckney, your time in jail, how it affects your family, how it affects you. Yes, it's up close and personal. I spent a few months in jail myself, and now I would rather go back than see Lynn in jail, because as you mentioned, she is a white person. And oftentimes I think, what would John Brown be doing if he were alive today? And the answer that comes to me is he would be Lynn Stewart, you know, fighting against all of these oppressive elements. But I'd like to say something about who and why she is in jail, because as all of the brothers in the street say, Lynn, you're not there because of your defense of that the Egyptian with the turban and sunglasses. You're there because of your 40 years defense of us. They see very clearly what other people do not, so-called political people do not see. And an interesting thing about that, you know, we've been getting this wiretapping. Oh, you know, there is no privacy in America.
Absolutely. But remember this. Don't let that wiretapping stop you.
Oh, no. But what I was saying is we have no idea how much the government is listening in. Now, the government claimed that they were not listening in to Lynn Stewart's conversations, and let me say that she never said anything that was really subversive, but what she did say was that she feels that we in the movement have let down our political prisoners. Even worse than that, she did say, and she spoke on the phone often about it, that she was going to go in front of the black churches and call up all of her family members and friends to go to the churches and say, and stand in front of them if they didn't let her in to speak on black political prisoners. And she had said, as a white woman in this society, she has been getting support. And she said to me personally, no more Lynn Stewart-only defense meetings. It has to be Lynn Stewart and other political prisoners. Now, I say to you, and I submit to all of your listeners, that is the most dangerous thing in this society to say, support black political prisoners. Fight to get them released from jail, like the Puerto Rican nationalists did for their political prisoners. And I said to Lynn, while this was happening, Lynn, you're on the phone, and this is the only way to organize this. You have to speak on the phone. But this, my friend, is very dangerous to be talking about black political prisoners. Now, this has not come up. No one has said that. But suddenly we get an answer from the appeal of this. She appealed her loss in court, and they say she's got to go to court instantly. Don't wait for it. It was 2 days before she was supposed to go to surgery. And generally when they say you lost your appeal, they give you 3 weeks, you get an extension, and they said she must go to jail instantly. And in their papers, they say she has been going to law schools around the country and to universities, Berkeley, San Francisco, Davidson, Seattle, and speaking and corrupting our youth. You hear me? Corrupting our youth. And this is the legal system of America. And as Larry pointed out, the Obama Injustice Department under Eric Holder, we're in trouble with this gentleman.
And you know, here's the thing, too, Ralph and Larry, this is what I want to comment to say right fast. You know, under the new administration, the Obama administration, he appears to be carrying out the same formula for destruction of the black race as his counter buddy Bush. He seemed to be following the same formula, doing the same things, and even on a different level. But we have to take a stand. We have to know, let the people know that we're 100% behind Lynn Stewart. We are going to do whatever necessary. And I tell you, I'm planning on having maybe a special show on Tuesday night so that we can talk a little bit about Lynn Stewart. Right now, they love me. They're willing to do anything that I ask them to do in order to get me on the radio and spread things around. But I tell you, we got to drum up this support for her like never before, and I know we can do it. And Ralph, Larry, I know what y'all are capable of doing. So we got to take this thing to a whole different level, and we got to stop the propaganda that's being spread about her by Eric Holman and Obama. They're spreading this out about her to try to defend themselves against her.
See, the interesting thing is people say, well, why is this case of Lynn Stewart so important other than it's a personal thing for you? And it is a personal thing for me. It is important because Lynn Stewart's case points up the perfidy of this whole question of terror. And she does it in several ways. And she points out, in the first place, the blind sheikh was not guilty. All of these terror cases are built by the FBI, the CIA, all intelligence. They get a ringer in there that goes and promises people money and inveigles people to get involved in their plots that would never happen, never even be thought of without these informers. They go into, not informers, provocateurs. They go into a poor community where the unemployment, the black rate of unemployment is 45% and 50%. And then they offer young brothers money, brothers who are trying to improve and change their lives and take up religion, the Islamic religion, become Muslims. They send somebody in with $1 million. Can you imagine somebody like the brothers in Liberty City in Florida, somebody coming in, they promise them shoes. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine someone who would promise you shoes? How far down do you have to be for shoes to be important? So they make up these cases, and then they get people convicted and frighten everyone, and then they rob the till of the country. And I say the till of the country is robbed. They've been saying terror, 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 and putting their hands in everybody's pocket and taking their homes. I think we're at 6 million now on foreclosures, on the way to 12 million foreclosures, and people are still talking about terror. Now, Lynn Stewart had the first big case, and she had Emad Salem on the witness stand, caught him lying 36 times. And he had to say, well, I guess, Ms. Stewart, I misstated that. And yet, the jury convicted the sheikh, and then Lynn Stewart continued to speak and say, this is all nonsense. There was no plot. The FBI set up the safe house. The FBI bought the material that was supposed to be the bombs. Emad Salem was on payroll from a quarter million to a half a million dollars doing this with the cameras and the whole thing, setting this up. And she says, terrorism, it is about self-defense and self-determination in other countries. People are fighting back.
Absolutely.
Most people would never
believe that our government would go out of their way to set folks up. But here I am. I'm a living example of what they did. I know for a fact that they was paying people money to come in and lie on me. And they wasn't giving them a whole lot of money. And now the people in the community was bragging that, you know, how crooked the government was. They're paying these folks money and they're bragging. They're going around telling them that if you come in and testify against Pinckney, you'll get paid. They went out and had these folks recruiting these people to come in and testify against me. People who had nothing to do with me, didn't even know me. The jury would never know the difference. But what we do, we let them get away with this. We let them off the hook because the people are too intimidated to take a stand. But I tell you, it's more of us than them. That's
right.
The message that we have to send to this government. The government is ran by the people, for the people. If it's not ran by the people, for the people, then you don't have a government. That's
exactly
what you don't have.
And Cynthia McKinney said it best. She said, this government has been hijacked by the corporations and the Israeli propaganda.
Zionists.
AIPAC. And the corporations, and there are only 5 senators, that's when she was, 5 Congress people, that's when she was in Congress, who were not bought by these 2 entities. And now there's only 4 because they got rid of her.
Yeah.
And she said it, she spoke it out, and for black people, as I said, the question for you gentlemen, and I ask you, Reverend Pinckney and Larry Pinckney, what has happened to us? That we have heroes like Cynthia McKinney and Lynn Stewart, and they're not getting support. People are out there supporting our enemy, Mr. Obama and Mr. Holder, the one who's going to get our children that they consider throwaways, killed. They're going to send them all over the world to support this evil empire. And then we have this startling figure, 66 or 67% of our youth to go into the service. The blacks and Latinos do not benefit from the promises that they gave them that they would get if they served the country, if they served America, if they served the corporations, if they served the empire. Get this, 66 to 67% of the young people never get these benefits. And you see it all over television. They inveigle these young men who are unemployed. And you see these advertisements. Mom, I'm going to get you a home. This is sophisticated. People who want a home, people who want to have these things. This is sophisticated advertisement. How do you get these young black men and women to join the service? They go at it in a very, very... give me the word, Larry. Give me the word.
Subterfuge, despicable. I mean, I can give you 1,000 words, my brother. They go at it in such a way as to pull at the hearts of the people. They go at it in a way to fool and bamboozle the people, to use what the people want as human beings against them. And they are lying. They are nothing but unmitigated liars, murderers, and thieves.
Well, give us another one, Larry, about Obama. What was he, sophisticated? What did you say that?
Well, I call him what he is, and Mr. Obama, Mr. Obama indeed. Obama is nothing more than an articulated colored corporate clone. Let me say that again. He is an articulate colored corporate clone.
He is a clone
of the military-industrial complex, a clone of the corporations. He is a liar. He is a pathological liar, and he's hurting everybody, black, white, brown, red, yellow. He's hurting people. He's killing us.
Yes, I think you said articulate, sophisticated. Articulate effete. Wow, I'm going to have to write it down, Larry. You said it so well last week. It's who he is. He's articulate, he lies, and he fools people. But I think that with this golf thing, it's starting to wear off when we find out how bad it is. I think there are something like 600 oil rigs or oil wells that were dug, and they're not uncapped. Now, the government that's supposed to watch and take care of that to make sure that they follow the law and cap that has done nothing. Environmental Protection Agency.
Ralph, before we get into that, tell us about the ritual. What y'all planning on for Wednesday, July 14th for Lynn Stewart? Let's talk about that a little
Wednesday,
bit.
Wednesday, July 14th in New York at 5:30, right at the courthouse at Worth and Center Street, we're going to have a demonstration. And it's going to go from 5:30 to 6:30, quarter to 7. And then we're going to march 3 blocks to the federal prison. And then we're going to let Lynn hear. We're going to let the people who are incarcerated hear us outside cheering with our drums and with our songs, with our speeches, with our voices. You know, like I said, like Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho. We're going to make sounds to make the people feel that the prison is going to fall down because we want the bars to fall down, you know, for the next day, the 15th Thursday, when Lynn goes before the court, which is scheduled for 2 p.m., when we're going to gather at the court starting at 11, that's on Worth Street near Baxter, which is all of these places I'm talking about, Tom Paine Park at Worth. It's within a 3-block area. And when you get in there, you're going to see and hear the people there speaking out on behalf of Lynn Stewart. And We just want everybody. We want it to look like New Year's Eve around those courts, you know, the way Times Square looks. We want to fill up that area, and people can help by letting everybody know the world is watching. This is not going to be a secret, quiet thing. And we're hoping that the judge who had given her, as you said, Reverend Pinckney, 28 months, she shouldn't have had a day. She should not have been accused. She should not have been found guilty. But we all know what they wanted to do. They wanted to silence Lynn Stewart. And I would send telegrams to Judge Codal. If people, you know, this federal court in New York City, just to send a telegram to Judge Codal. And to say, you know, let my people go. And Lynn Stewart is our people. She
That's
is
right.
one who was defended when she found out at the age of 22 that Harlem existed. Now, I'm going to tell this story one more time. She grew up, she was born not 5 miles from Harlem, valedictorian of every class she was ever in, and she didn't know Harlem existed. Can you imagine that? And when she came there as a 22-year-old teacher, looked around and says, what is this? And when she realized the answer, she became a supporter of our people because she said, this is wrong. This is wrong to treat children in the education system this way, to classify them and to assume that they can't learn and then to make this evil prediction come true, self-fulfilling prophecy by the teachers of the system. So anyway, it's one of those situations where where she has been on our side for a long, long time, and we have to get on her side. And I thank you. I thank you, Reverend Larry, for the support you have given Lynn and the support you give me and the support you give our community and the support you give to justice and the support you give of all justice-loving people in this world on every issue that you do. So I'm going to see you personally, and I met you for the first time at the forum in Detroit, and I look forward to talking to you, seeing you again, and I have my golf club. I'm ready.
Very good.
I'm ready.
But do you have that fax number for that judge?
I do not have, you know, a fax number. You do not need
a
fax.
If this is correct, I have 718-789-0558.
That's my fax. And if you were to send me faxes, I would
okay.
let the judge get some. It's
okay.
718-789-0558. If you were to fax your comments to me,
mm-hmm.
And please do it right away, because
okay.
I will present them first thing in the morning to go to Judge Codal.
And what we want to say, we want you to send letters, fax letters to Ralph, so that Lynn know that we are in full support of what's happening here, and we're with her 100%. We're backing her, and regardless what anybody else say, we're 100% for Lynn.
And I would like
yeah.
to add to this, Reverend Pinckney, for everybody who's listening, is the Good Samaritan, not a Good Samaritan. Reverend Pinckney is the Good Samaritan, and you can tell it not by my words, but by his good acts over the years. And I love it when people look, you can't take two steps without somebody asking for an autograph or asking for a statement or wanting to get a picture with Reverend Pinckney. And I have to admit, I was one of them. I got there beside him. Let me be standing beside this Good Samaritan who is helping our people in every way possible.
Hey, Larry.
Let me say that the most important thing, one of the things about Lynn Stewart, and her name is LynnStewart, Lynn Stewart, the people's lawyer, the imprisoned people's lawyer. Let me say that Lynn has always stood and fought literally in the courtrooms aggressively for the people, be they black, white, brown, red, yellow. Lynn has been there. She doesn't believe in BS. She's for real. She's fought for poor folk who did not have the wherewithal financially to pay. I remember a story that Lynn talked about where people would beg her, oh, Lynn, don't take that case. We're trying to pay our bills. We're trying to keep the lights on in the office. Don't take that case. And you know what Lynn would do? Well, she would take the case. She would take the case of the poor person. She would fight hard. She didn't just take, she wasn't no dump truck lawyer. This is why the government, the corporations, these slime bags, that's what they are, and that's being very diplomatic because they're slimy. This is why they have tried to silence Lynn Stewart. This is why they are trying to silence all of us, because she stands not only for, but she stands with the people. Can we do any less?
And one of the saddest things is her attorneys have been trying to silence her since the government couldn't.
Exactly.
They're saying, Lynn, please don't say anything because you will offend those who put you in jail. And I remember once Lynn was about to speak, and somebody says, you know, Lynn, I don't think you should speak. You might get in trouble. And Lynn says, I have been convicted of terrorism. I believe I'm in trouble.
Trouble already. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I
she,
say that, that's a tremendous story. But listen, on that note, I got to bring on Mr. Sergeant Early Story. He's from Memphis, Tennessee. He's a former police officer, and he also a whistleblower. And I want to make sure that we get a chance to hear his story. So, Mr. Story, are you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Peter.
Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yeah, Early Story. That's how you pronounce
it. They call it an early show, huh?
Yes, sir.
I know the feel. Mr. Story, we have Ralph Pointer, the wife of Lynn Stewart, on this line, and he's a dear friend of mine, and also Larry Pinckney, the former Black Panther member and also a true soldier, true fighter. I'd like for you to take the time out and tell us a little bit about you. Then let's go into your story, because you have about 20 to 25 minutes to tell it today. But we're going to give you another opportunity to even talk more on our next show. But you go right ahead. I want you to start right now, and I'm just going to hold my words, and you just go ahead and do what you have to do.
Well, God bless you, and I thank you for your time and the opportunity. And I thank the Lord Jesus Christ for giving me this opportunity. I'm a 56-year-old black man from Memphis. I was a sergeant in Shelby County Jail at the time of this setup, framing, that turned my life upside down. My mother and father, I was raised, of course, in the civil rights era. And during that time, it was instilled in my heart that, I'm a Christian first and a man of God always. But when I got hired as a jailer, I was noticing so much injustices in the Shelby County Jail. And I testified in 1988 against some beating that occurred in the jail. I knew it was racially motivated, and I knew it was unjust. And so I wound up eventually testifying in federal court against my own department, which was odd. And I was testifying on behalf of the Memphis NAACP. That was kind of, going against the grain. And so the judge, who is deceased now, Federal Judge Jerome Turner, he cautioned the official not to retaliate against me for my testimony, because I testified that the beatings of the inmates was unjustified and was unlawful. NAACP prevailed in the lawsuit against Shelby County government.
Huh?
Of course, right then, I had made a lot of people angry. I'm a jump start on up in the future.
You got plenty of time to talk about it.
Okay. And I'm continuously working. Of course, I was a sergeant. One day, it was in the morning, an inmate came to me. It's a Sergeant Story. Can't get this inmate to come to eat his food. He stays in the bed. And so I went to the cell block. When I went to the cell block, this inmate was almost dead. He was dried up blood, barely conscious. I got the officer to open up the cell block. I went inside and started investigating. I started talking to this inmate. His name was Jerry Gregory. And he was very weak, but he started talking. He told me what had happened. He had got assaulted. Knowing his condition, I summoned for the medical department, took pictures of the crime scene, and I wrote an officer up for failing to discover his injuries during his morning head count. This officer that failed to discover him at the right time, because I had discovered at 10 p.m., my head count was 6 a.m. in the morning. And so I written him up for, disciplinary infraction. That angered a lot of people. All right, this inmate eventually died. After he died, I knew the corruption in the Shelby County Jail. I knew their style of doing things, and so I felt compelled to go outside the agency to get help because I knew it was some negligence that allowed him to be physically abused because the cell block that he's in, he was supposed to have been inside his cell and not to be in contact with any other inmate. And so I went to this lawyer and gave this lawyer pertinent information concerning this inmate's death. When I went to this lawyer, now this one, mind you, in 95, when I went to this lawyer and told him I was totally prepared to go to court against the county, but unbeknown to me, they kept everything in my participation in this case quiet. Next thing I know, in 1997, I didn't know the status of this inmate's death, how the litigation was going on with him. But in 1997, I gets arrested. They put a drug charge on me. Mm-hmm. Come to my home. I never used drugs. Lord knows, never sold any drugs. But here I am. They put a marijuana charge on me. After they put the dope charge on me, well, I'm feeling totally, that justice will be on my behalf. And so,
look, and let me say, interrupt you real.
Okay.
Now, you're a sergeant and you're from the sheriff's department. And once you go, look, that courtroom, I don't care where you live, what state you live in, justice will not prevail.
Okay.
I don't care what you say. You can have all the evidence. If they need to pay somebody to come in and testify against you, it will. Look, you obviously, when you're in that courtroom, everything they say is true, even if it's a lie. And but,
that's right.
Yeah, it's true. Even if it's a lie, it's the truth. And I learned this the hard way myself. But I'm gonna let you finish saying it because you should know better. You know how these guys is. I go to the courthouse every day. I've been doing it for 10 years,
uh-huh.
And I tell you, some of the lies that I hear over there. I know that's a lie. I know the judge knows it's a lie. I know the prosecutor knows it's a lie. I know the sheriff's department knows it's a lie. I know they all know it's a lie. But yet, it gets through and convicts all these guys.
I must say, as 35 years as a private investigator, I'm listening very carefully. And I'm telling you, Sergeant, you are innocent because you don't even know what to call the marijuana. That is not referred to in the business as dope. It is not. So you're a neophyte here. You don't know what. You're not guilty. But go ahead with this story.
Go ahead and finish that because, see, if you knew what it was, you would have called it marijuana instead of dope. But marijuana is not dope.
No. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, they put that charge on me. And me and my wife, family, we was confused. We didn't know where it was coming from. Lord knows I didn't know they was arresting me for this, not testifying, for me testifying about this inmate death. I found all this here later on. But anyway, when I went to court, preliminary hearing, the judge dismissed it, dismissed the case due to lack of probable cause. And so I thought I was going to be restored my job back and everything else. But I wasn't. This sheriff was very powerful politically. And here I was set free, but couldn't get my job back. And
whoa.
I couldn't go here. And I couldn't get an attorney to get my job back. I was really confused. And so I started with the little law knowledge that I had. I filed a pro se petition to the court, you know, to get my keep my case alive. As soon as I filed this here pro se petition to get inside the court, I remember this lawyer that I gave information about this inmate's death. And so I'm thinking, I said, well, maybe I can go to him to get some help. You know, because the court, the federal court, was going to appoint me a lawyer if, you know what I'm saying, if it was in their power. And so when I went to this lawyer and told him I had already applied for a lawyer, well, he said he would volunteer and be my lawyer. If the court would allow him. And so he wound up eventually being my lawyer. This lawyer, I didn't know, but this lawyer had already had conspired with the Shelby County government.
Friend, I'm going to interrupt you at that point because
okay.
I came to that conclusion 10 minutes ago. But go ahead and continue.
Yeah. well, that's what happened. That lawyer, he winds up, because I found a disclosure list just last year. He had my name submitted already to the Shelby County government for being a witness in this inmate death before I even got arrested. And so I was wondering, I said, well, if he already had submitted my name to the county as being a witness in this inmate death, how come he didn't make that my defense while he was my lawyer? And so I put all that in writing. And right now, as we speak, I submitted this information to the federal court, Judge Bernice Donald, who right now is supposed to have been reopening this case, which was administratively closed, but had been in the office ever since May of this year, May the 10th, and seemed like she's stonewalling. The players involved here in Memphis, the Memphis Shelby County Jail, and the political people are the same people that been suppressing records, evidence concerning Dr. Martin Luther King. And for some strange reason, these people in Memphis got a connection with the federal government. Now, I know this is a lot, this not speculating, this is something that I've observed throughout the years. The judge that they put me before the railroad, me, John P. Colton Jr., he was one of the judges that was, Martin Luther King
conspiracy.
The conspiracy trial. He the one that held that.
Mm.
And they got a connection with Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, prior to my trial, some persons from the United States Department of Justice came all the way down here, came from Washington, D.C., to interview myself and others concerning this case. But they didn't come down here to set us free. They came down here to cover up.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's
client.
Right. Say that again, brother.
Yeah.
Let me just interject real quick.
right.
You said a mouthful, as brother, as Reverend Pinion would say. You said a mouthful when you said that. They didn't come to uncover. They came to cover up. I hope our audience listens closely to that. Go ahead, my brother.
Well, I found a whole lot of stuff up, you know, retrospectively. But I want to say this. When justice is so backwards that you can be under your official title, I was a sworn sergeant, jailer. I was sworn to protect inmates. And, you know, if under the law, if I make a false accusation against a district attorney or somebody like that, I'm subject to prosecution and to be locked up for lying. And so I wouldn't do this, especially nationally. They are so crooked down there that they were bold enough to obstruct a murder case. They obstructed justice. They kept me from testifying in a murder case. And my name is in deposition throughout the whole case. And they didn't think that I would ever be knowledgeable enough to find out what they had done. Because I don't exalt myself. I don't say I'm, you know, no very brilliant person. But thanks to the Lord Jesus Christ, he gave me enough knowledge to figure out what had transpired. And so,
Mr. Story, let me say this too. Do you know why they planted that marijuana on you? Do you have any clue why they did that?
They did not even plant it. No drugs on me. They what they did, they got three young guys out of North Memphis, some guys I had never met before in my life, mm-hmm. and arrested them and just made up a big story.
But you know, the reason they did it to discredit you.
Uh-huh.
That's what the whole thing to take away your credibility.
Uh-huh.
That's how they do. It wasn't this. See, when they threw it out of court, in a way, you thought that was a victory.
Uh-huh.
It was a minor victory. But
yes,
they accomplished exactly what they set out to do, to discredit uh-huh. you and people in the community. See, one thing about us as black folks, if the newspapers say something or if these white folks say something, for reason unknown, we believe it.
Yes.
And I can say the same identical thing that this white man next door to me is saying.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to believe that white man over me. So now what they have done, they have discredited you.
Yes.
You see, even when you get to your lawsuit, you're being discredited by saying that now you're a drug user or you are a drug dealer or whatever they want to say. It's only marijuana.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, marijuana is nothing but in the eyes of us, we go nuts over that.
Uh-huh, yes.
But listen, go ahead with your story, because we only got about 7 minutes to get this. And I really want to come in here. I got so much to say about this story already. But we'll do that next week. We'll deal with the rest of it. But you just tell us, take us as far as you can go in 7 minutes, and then we'll finish up next week.
Okay, well, look, one of the young guys that they accused with me was a juvenile. And this juvenile was man enough to tell the truth. He would not lie. You know, he would not say that me and him were participants. He just told the truth. I'd never seen this man the day before in my life.
Wonderful.
He was, young, but the thing that troubled me, this young man, he was steadfast on telling the truth, and he did not get a chance to say it in court. He was
mm-hmm.
murdered.
Oh,
he was murdered.
And on top of that,
you say he was murdered?
He was
murdered.
Killed. Yes, he was murdered. And the man they arrested for murdering him comes up dead.
Oh,
Whoa, the truth is too good. And this is your
administration. This is too good. We got to keep it going. Keep going. Don't stop now.
Now, after this man gets killed, that's how Washington, D.C. came down here. They didn't come down here. You know, that was through Malvo. I thought they would come down here and investigate his death. But they were coming down here to cover up these crooked folk in Memphis crime.
Now,
I've been on the radio. I was telling them, I said, well, if I was selling drugs and with a juvenile, why didn't they charge me with contributing to the delinquency of a minor, which I would never were charged with? And so it's so obvious that I just, been staying in prayer. Now, let me tell you, Miss Mary Neal, she informed me to call you Reverend Pinckney.
Yeah.
And because her brother, he was in the same jail.
Larry Neal.
He was in the same, but not benign to me. But I know that when I having difficulty getting a counsel in Tennessee, I went to New York and talked with, got hooked up with the Johnny Cochran law firm just before we
came.
And when I did that, the Cochran firm was going to work through a law firm in Memphis in order to try to take our case. But for some strange reason, the law firm in Memphis reneged, and the Johnny Cochran office, when it came down here, they had an attorney in there by the name of Julian Bolton, who happened to be a county commissioner. He blocked me and the others trying to get help concerning this case. But to make this here thing short for right now, Memphis is very corrupt. And I want the listening audience to remember my name for the safety of myself and my family.
Yes.
Now, tell it.
We're listening.
That's my main reason for doing this. These are demons. I know that I'm a small person, a small stature, but I got a big God, and I'm telling the truth. And the truth supposed to set us free, and I'm going to stand by it.
Right on.
These people are very corrupt, and it is a Memphis, Washington, D.C. I'm talking about connection.
Mm-hmm.
And that connection, and I'm saying this, if they can go jump through hoops to deny me justice, to keep me from testifying in a murder trial, I mean, that's bold. What you think they done with Martin Luther King history? They got records sealed on him.
Let me tell you, jump in here. I'm from New York, and I'm going to personally get in touch with Earl Caldwell, who was involved in the investigation around Martin Luther King's death and said the government is lying from that perspective, and get him involved in this as a radio commentator, if that's okay with you, Reverend Pinckney.
Oh, that's excellent, excellent. And what we want to do, we're going to cut the story off right there, but we want you to come back next week, Earl.
Give us your name, the figure, please.
Yeah, give us your name and give us as much information as you can. We want you to come back next Sunday at 5 p.m. and finish this story because this is too good not to tell. And I'm telling you this, we only got a minute left, so you take this minute and you give us whatever you want to say. Say it, please.
All I want you to do, Reverend Pinckney, and the listening audience, is to support. We are no stronger than we work together.
Name.
This is not an isolated case. It's a lot of people incarcerated wrongfully now, and I couldn't get no help. Basically, they think all the injustices come from a murder case, and it's not the case. A lot of people incarcerated just for drugs.
Name
wrongfully.
So we can get you.
Yes, uh-huh. And so
Your name, repeat it.
Yes, sir. if I can get support, and Lord knows my heart is in the right place, and I just want to thank y'all for giving me the chance to even say anything concerning this.
Your name, please, so we can get to you.
Oh, my name is Early Story. Early Story. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee.
And okay, Mr. Story, what we're going to do, we're going to be in touch. We want you to come on next week, and then we can have a little bit more time to really get into this, and we're going to do whatever we can to help you. See, the thing is, once we get an idea exactly where we're going with it, we'll put our heads together, and we do have a lot of connections from different areas that we can help you. And I tell you this, we're going to reach out to you, Mr. Story. And I know my brother Larry, I know my brother Ralph, we're all going to be working hard on this, but right now we're concentrating on Lynn Stewart, but we will go beyond the call of duty to help you. And on that note, we have no more time.
Goodbye, Good Samaritan.
Yeah, all right, then. Take care, everybody. And listen, Ralph, I'm going to be praying for Lynn, and I'm going to see, can I get folks to fax letters to you? And
great.
In the meantime, Earl, you take care of yourself, and we're with you 100%. You hear me?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We're here. We're going to do everything we can to support you and take care of our business. And my brother, Larry, I want you to know I love you. And we got to get together and plan for the mass demonstration here in Benton Harbor, August the 10th. We got to make sure that we get you here, Larry. We got to make sure, Ralph, you get here. And we're going to make sure that we have something big. And we want both of y'all to be speakers. Also, Mr. Story, I would love for you to come here to Benton Harbor, and we may have to figure out a way how we're going to work that out. But in the meantime, I have no more time, but please, I want you to call in next Sunday at the same time, and we're going to dedicate the show to you.
Thank you. God bless you.
Stay strong, brother.
Y'all take care, everybody.
All right.
Allow me to be with you, gentlemen.
Yes,